Good morning. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM, and I'm Alexandra Gutierrez. In place of our regular midday news coverage, we will be featuring a live in-studio interview with Governor Sean Parnell, who is visiting Unalaska as part of the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Wellness and Governance Conference this week. Welcome, Governor.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Great having you. So just starting off, the big news today is that the U.S. Secretary of Commerce has approved your request for a federal fisheries disaster for the Chinook and Chinook runs along the Yukon and Kuskokwim Rivers. The declaration only has teeth, though, if they appropriate any money to it. If there isn't any funds from the federal government, what does the state plan to do instead?
Well, I think it's too hard to speculate about what they might do or not. I mean, clearly they have funded disasters in the past. I expect them to step forward under their own Magnuson-Stevens Act and fund a disaster that's been approved by the Department of Commerce. So we're going to continue to fight that fight. I made the request for this area as well as for the Kenai Peninsula, which has experienced low King runs as well. And we're going to continue doing that.
And do you have a contingency plan if there isn't funding?
Well, certainly there is the legislative session that we can obtain funding through. But our goal really is to make the federal government step up to their own law and pay for the disaster that has qualified under the Magnuson-Stevens Act.
Well, so now I'd like to spend the rest of our interview focusing on an issue that's really important to you, which is energy development. Here in Unalaska, we've seen plenty of traffic from Shell these past few years, and it's expected to ramp up as Arctic drilling ramps up. That means that there will be need for more ports facilities and better infrastructure in general. Are there any projects for the Aleutian region related to energy development that you're planning on including in your budget with the legislative session not too far off?
Somebody must have given you a good question to ask me, because you know every community would like to see their project in the governor's budget, which I release on December 15. Typically, I have to tell you, I put agency projects in the budget that I propose, and then I leave it to legislators to propose their region's projects, like port upgrades. But let's talk about energy for a second, because this area in Unalaska and surrounding communities pay a lot for energy, and there are a couple opportunities. I mean, obviously geothermal is close at hand, but LNG is also a developing area. We've got in the Cook Inlet in south central Alaska, it appears that that we've got some explorers who found some more gas. Well, for 42 years, we've been exporting gas as well as using it in Cook Inlet, but we've been exporting gas to Japan. There is the possibility that Unalaska could build storage facilities here and convert to LNG or propane and have a cheaper energy source there as well. So I've encouraged both the council and the members here to look at LNG as a possibility in the future along with geothermal.
I was going to ask you about this later in our interview, but one of the greatest ironies of living in Alaska is that despite having abundant sources of energy, gas bills, heating fuel bills, they're all extraordinarily high compared to the rest of the United States. Those are some long-term solutions to that problem, but do you have any plans in the short term to kind of bring more relief to communities in this region when it comes to heating their homes and you know, getting gas into their cars?
Well, certainly. I mean, every year we fund PCE, the Power Cost Equalization Program. We fund energy conservation efforts, energy efficiency efforts in homes, weatherization. We fund wind turbines across the state. I mean, clearly, renewable energy has been a huge issue. I mean, 2 years ago, we funded $1.2 billion in energy projects. The problem is that the need is so great. And so what I ask communities to do is to look around them. Don't wait for Juno to do something. Look around you and see what energy is at hand. And here it's geothermal, but you're also at the crossroads for LNG traffic. Those tankers go from Nikiski in Cook Inlet across to Japan. There's no reason why the city shouldn't be pitching ConocoPhillips to bring some LNG here, and then we can create a place where storage of that LNG is possible. And it can not only fuel residents' homes, but it can also provide fuel for ships that need to use it during Shell's development, as well as in the emission control area that's been created by the federal government and other international organizations as they travel to the lower 48. So there's a lot of opportunity here.
And there were problems with the Cook Inlet gas storage facility this year that have since been rectified. You know, in trying to plan like having something like that here, how would we go about avoiding repeating that situation?
Well, the issue really is Unalaska approaching people with gas and saying, what will it take for you to ship it here. I mean, it means doing a study or an assessment in this community on what that would take, and then it means contacting the people with gas to sell. And certainly, that's Alaska gas that is being produced in Cook Inlet. It could certainly be shipped here as well as Japan. It's being used in South Central now. It's being used in Japan. It could be used in Alaska. But then beyond the Cook Inlet gas is North Slope gas. And we've made progress on a large diameter gas pipeline. We now have Conoco, BP, Exxon, and TransCanada all aligned, working on bringing a project from the North Slope to Tidewater in South Central Alaska. So in the long term, there's also the prospect for gas, Alaska gas, to come to Unalaska, and also to, frankly, a lot of the villages along the way in the form of propane.
And maybe I'm just not clear on this, but, you know, with the Cook Inlet gas storage facility, you know, they did approach the companies. There was a commitment, and then there was concern that that would be shipped to Asia instead of used in Anchorage and South Central. I mean, how do you get these facilities and then keep that commitment to have these storage facilities build up?
You sign a contract.
Yeah.
I mean, they resolve those differences. That's been resolved. But the bottom line is you've got to start somewhere. So I've urged the leadership in Unalaska to do a thorough study of how to bring LNG here and how to distribute it, and to figure out whether it's economically viable and what it would take to make it viable.
Mm-hmm. And I guess going back to Arctic development as it relates to the Aleutian region, I guess just to get your perspective on this, where do you see this community, you know, 20 years down the road as Arctic drilling is expected to, you know, go into production? I mean, what do you imagine this community looking like, and how do you see this community benefiting from it?
Well, you know, this morning at breakfast, I had the opportunity to see again former Representative Carl Moses, who I served with in the legislature in the 90s. Who's been here a long time, and he commented to me about how few people were here in 1961 when he came, and how many are here now, and how much the place and the opportunities have changed. And you know, when I look at the growing economy that is in Alaska, and I go into the school as my wife Sandy and I did this morning, and see young people who are clearly educated well beyond many others in Alaska. So the opportunities clearly in the schools here. When I see the burgeoning economy, I think of opportunity. And I think that as Shell avails itself of opportunity in the Chukchi and Beaufort and other companies too, whether it's Conoco or others, Dutch Harbor, Unalaska, this whole region is situated strategically to take advantage of that. And so the people of Unalaska, as I know you've done, are welcoming that opportunity, because it means opportunity for Alaskans. And that's the only way I can characterize it, is it's pure, unadulterated opportunity for Alaskans here.
And I guess to follow up on some of those benefits, when an Alaska City Council is in Washington, D.C. this week, they're planning on lobbying for revenue sharing of federal oil taxes accrued offshore. How are you going to make sure that money from offshore drilling comes back to Alaskan communities, all Alaskan communities, and not just those near drill sites?
Well, because that's the system we have now, is that Alaska's resources belong to Alaskans. Now, when we're talking about in the Arctic OCS, when we're talking more than 3 miles offshore, which is where Shell is currently exploring, those are federal waters, and federal revenue sharing laws apply. The problem is Alaska is not treated like any other place. You know, Texas gets to share in the federal revenues from those federal OCS lands. State of Alaska, we don't get to share in that yet. So we're working, as is our delegation in Washington, to assure that we get our fair share of revenue from federal leases. That's going to take federal legislation. It's going to take Senators Murkowski, Begich, Representative Young making the case in Washington. We've already worked with them to make that case. It'll continue to be made. Thankfully, we probably have a few more years before oil starts to be produced or gas starts to be produced from those leases. But we've got to get that revenue sharing legislation in place federally in order to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not in place yet, and a lot of attention has been placed on the Trans-Alaska pipeline and the declining production there. You, for the past two legislative sessions, have proposed reducing oil taxes. Do you plan on making this your top priority in the coming legislative session as well?
I do. The case is really about increasing oil production from state lands. Reducing oil taxes is one way to do that. It's kind of as simple as this, that if you have a choice between two banks to put your savings account in, and one bank pays you 1% interest for your money, and another bank pays you 2% interest, where are you going to put it? You're going to put it at 2%. Alaska is the same way. When we ask companies to invest money here and drill new wells, exploring new frontiers as well as legacy fields, they're making a return on the money they invest. But if they make a greater return somewhere else, like they're doing today in Texas, Louisiana, North Dakota, and overseas, that's where the money's going to go. And so we have a vast resource under the North Slope right now. They, for 40 years, have been producing lighter oil. There's what's called viscous oil. There is heavy oil. Those are resources that are more costly to produce. They're not going to produce those if they can't make money on those compared to compared to the profit they can make somewhere else. So my goal is to increase production. And so I'm working to change the tax regime in a way that increases production and unlocks Alaska's resources for Alaskans. If we leave it in the ground, that's a wasted resource for Alaskans. That's like saying we're never, ever going to access what belongs and rightfully belongs to Alaskans.
And one of the major hangups was trying to get commitments from oil companies to say, yes, we will do this. I know that you had some verbal commitments, but have you had any more progress in getting hard commitments on this issue?
Actually, the hangup was in the prejudices of legislators who have a prejudice against oil companies. They don't think that there's a partnership there where Alaskans derive benefit. My goal is to make Alaskans benefit by unlocking the resource, which belongs to Alaskans. And so I think you're hearing it here when I say our focus is on new production. If you have a candidate or a person who says that they oppose oil tax changes, ask them what their plan is to get new production. Because 20 years ago, we were producing 2.2 million barrels a day. Today, it's about 550,000 barrels per day and going down. If we keep our budget right now is based upon $104 a barrel oil. 3 years ago, we were at $60 and $70 a barrel oil. It's being dependent upon oil is a hard place to be. But if we have more production, we have more opportunity for Alaskans through new state revenues and jobs. So I am focused on new production. And if you have a candidate or you have a person in your studio who doesn't support the tax changes that we're talking about, ask them what their plan is for new production, because that's what this is about.
And, you know, the past 2 years, it's kind of been the Senate bipartisan coalition that's blocked your version of the oil tax plan.
Some members of it.
And this is an election year where the makeup could change. However, if the bipartisan coalition does remain intact, what's your plan for working with the legislature and kind of reaching a compromise on the oil tax issue?
Again, it's going to be about new production. I mean, if, for example, last year they spoke derisively or derogatorily about my initial plan. So what I did is I cut it in half. I met them halfway. And that was in special session. In fact, Tim Bradner, one of the columnists for the Petroleum Journal or the Journal of Commerce, said that Parnell's proposal in the special session met them halfway. You know, by 2017, it was basically splitting the difference between the two positions. But instead of embracing that as a compromise, I was beat over the head as if, you know, nothing had changed. So what we need are people who are willing to actually listen to what's placed before them and do what's best for Alaskans. And I think that means increasing production. I have a plan to increase production. I'd like to see others either join me in that or put their own on the table so I can work with them on it.
And I think there's been some concern that with decreasing tax revenue, this oil tax break would, you know, reduce revenue by $1.7 billion, if the numbers I've seen are correct. You also mentioned a potential $800 million shortfall this morning when speaking to the conference. how do we square that in terms of providing services to our schools, public safety, et cetera?
Okay, so that first number you just threw out there, the $1.7 billion, that was on the original proposal. That wasn't on the compromise that I offered in the special session, which cut that in half. But what we have are people who are focused on the short term, what we might lose today versus what we're going to lose long term by not changing things now. Right now, we have money in the bank. We have about $15 billion in savings. I mean, how much is enough? Well, I think that's enough for now. But if 540,000 declines over the next 10 years and we don't do anything to turn that around, we're going to be fighting over when the pipeline shuts down, not how much revenue we have. So I'm interested in growing the pie, not fighting over a shrinking production curve.
And if this legislative session turns into a repeat of the past two, I mean, where do you think this leaves us? I mean, is this something that you're going to keep on fighting for? Would we go into a third special session? I mean, when do you kind of give up on an issue where there hasn't been any sort of resolution?
Well, I'll never give up on growing opportunity for Alaskans. I mean, I'm a pretty persistent person, but I'm always willing to look at new ideas on how to increase production. And if somebody's got a new, better idea, I'm open to it.
And I guess getting back to sort of development in this region, this region is kind of in a vulnerable position in terms of the amount of shipping we had. You know, we had a major disaster with the Sullendang IU. This summer, you know, there were some concerns when the Noble Discoverer became unmoored and lost control in the bay. Now that we're expected to see more vessel traffic, there are going to be more risks assumed by this community. How do we sort of limit those risks? What is your administration doing to sort of make sure that whether you're on the North Slope or down in the Aleutian Islands, the downside of oil production is not going to affect these communities?
Well, you're speaking about an issue bigger than oil production. I mean, you're speaking about communities that are vulnerable by space and distance, by lack of infrastructure, because the more we can take care of ourselves as communities, the more sustainable we are amidst the storms of life. And from a big picture perspective, I've done things like spoken with a commandant of the Coast Guard about increasing the Coast Guard presence around here as well as up the northern and northwestern coast of Alaska. We've spoken to and actually spent money on studying a new port location on the northwest side of Alaska, which again makes the Unalaska region more of a hub for activities that are going on up north as well. So from a big picture perspective, we're partnering with the Coast Guard on communications efforts, port efforts, hangar efforts, spill prevention and response efforts, whether it's here or up the coast north of here. From a community perspective, we've also focused on individual responsibility and said, for example, when it comes to emergency and disasters, homes need to be prepared. Alaska needs to be prepared to take care of ourselves for about 7 days through our own foodstuffs, our own water. We need to be ready for that because the rest of America won't be able to get us help, or Canada won't be able to get us help in the midst of a large-scale disaster. So we're not only working on the big picture perspective, we're working down to the very home level and everything in between.
All right. Well, I think that we're running out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to add today?
Well, I'm just grateful for the opportunity to once again visit Unalaska, to speak with the people. I was so encouraged by the young people in the school. Both my wife and I were welcomed, and the questions that they asked were as good as any journalist has asked. They are wonderful young people with great opportunity ahead. I did sign a piece of legislation at the school that I sponsored to create a fund for the Alaska Performance Scholarships, which these kids can earn, to give them a shot at college or job training following high school. So that was a great opportunity. And I just want to say thank you for the hospitality we've received in Unalaska and for the great people we see here. We'll continue to look out for you. We'll continue to remember you. And thank you again.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
That was Governor Sean Parnell. And we will be going back to our regularly scheduled programming. Thanks for tuning in.